views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Welcome to The Hit Show, Heart Center Talk Radio with David Christopher Lewis, a gifted clairaudient, Aquarian spiritual author, and talented musical composer on TransformationTalkRadio.com. During this hit show, David will share the Ascended Master's teachings, insights, and surprising revelations to light bearers. He invites you to engage him in discussing how these living messages and living revelations are relevant to your personal spiritual quests. Get a refreshing perspective on life and meet some of the beautiful people who embody change and inspire hope. Join our sacred circle of oneness and call 1-800-930-2819 to share. Now here is your host, David Christopher Lewis.
Welcome, everyone. I am David Christopher Lewis, and you're listening to Heart Center Talk Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. For the next hour, we'll be experiencing together a great opportunity to open our hearts and minds and explore some interesting concepts, new age or spiritual concepts that will be of benefit to your soul, your spirit, from a very high perspective of Buddhist mindfulness. Our Hearts Center Talk Radio is sponsored by the Heart Center community worldwide, heartcenter.org, where we experience new teachings, solar sciences, and eternal truths, keys that help us to transform our life. My question to you as our listeners today is, how do you deal with anger and the negative emotions that come when things don't go your way? My special guest today is Dr. Robert Thurman, also known as Tenzin, and he's been dubbed the Red Skelton of Tibetan Buddhism by a friend, and he's a compelling teacher and scholar. Robert has emerged as one of the most charismatic exponents of Tibetan Buddhism in America. He's a powerful and entertaining speaker and an advocate for the liberation of Tibet. He is a close friend of the Dalai Lama and a cultural liaison to America. He's a prolific author and advocate for peace, and Robert is very passionate about his mission in this lifetime to promote the true teachings of Buddhism in the West, and it's really my honor to welcome him and to explore a newer book that he has co-authored called Love Your Enemies, How to Break the Anger Habit and Be a Whole Lot Happier. And as he paraphrases, love your enemies, it will drive them crazy. So welcome, Robert Thurman.
Well, thank you, David. It's very nice to be with you and all your many friends.
So Robert, you teach at Columbia University. You have a passion for Buddhism. You are actually a monk. Tell us a little bit about your life story and what brought you to this current teaching that you are promoting to the world about a very key element of Buddhism, which is to love our enemies.
Well, Buddha, like Jesus, he called out long ago what still so many of us haven't learned, that violence always breeds violence, anger breeds more anger, and that it's more practical, actually, and more realistic to love your enemy in the sense that try to work for the happiness of your enemy. Because if your enemy is happy, why would he bother or she to continue to be your enemy? So it's actually a logical thing. People nowadays are so far from it that they think that it's impractical and idealistic, and that the real thing is to hate your enemy or kill your enemy, and therefore they're having these endless conflicts, as Jesus and Buddha both said that they would. So Sharon and I thought we should make a contribution in that direction, because there is so much violence in the world, and we should use that side of the Buddha's teaching. Now, in regard to the Buddha's teaching, I never did see it primarily as religious, actually, when I was a young man looking for something, quite young, actually over 50 years ago. And I was looking for knowledge of the nature of the world. You know, I thought that I didn't like the religions because they told you uniformly, whichever one, that you can't know the nature of the world and only God can know that. And you just have to follow orders, so to speak. And then the scientists who didn't believe in that, they said, well, you have to investigate this little corner of the world and you can find out more things about it and you can do things with it, with technology, but you'll never know the whole thing. So they also told you that you can't understand the world. So I somehow had an intuition that that was really not right, which maybe was part adolescent omniscience and part... Part an affinity maybe from my previous lives that there's a different tradition. Buddha's discovery was that the human being is capable of understanding himself or herself and the world, and to a degree, to a sufficient degree at least, that they can become free of suffering permanently, completely, and yet still be there, you know, for other people, not die. He discovered, that was his discovery, that's why he was a happy camper, you know. It's his third, what he called the third noble truth, that the real reality of the world is nirvana, or freedom from suffering, the extinction of suffering. And the unreal nature of the world is suffering, the first noble truth. When you're conflicted with ignorance and you wrongly think that you're the center of the universe and everything else and everyone else in the universe is separate from you, then you will be in conflict with them, with it and them eventually, most of the time, unfortunately, and then you will lose that conflict and you will suffer. So that's just, it wasn't really rocket science, that second part, the first noble truth. We all know that, that as long as we are just the one of us and there's the whole world out there, but when you discover that you and the world are one entity, interrelated, and you have some degree of difference between you, it isn't some silly thing where you just fall into a cosmic soup and you and the world are just one soup, then there's no one left who is enjoying that. So it's not that either. It's neither extreme of being absolutely different or absolutely one. It's a kind of more complicated consciousness that can be cultivated by the human being, a more complex one, where they are aware of a degree of oneness, very strong degree, that makes them not fear the universe and not be against the universe. And yet they are separate in the sense that they enjoy that oneness, and also they are there for other beings to help them, cheer them up, you know. So anyway, I was looking for that, I think. And I was looking for a method, teaching, a science that supported that. And I think I thought when I was 20 years old that finally I found it in books and personal teachers and traditions. I really was looking in India, but I found that the Indians had lost that aspect of their culture 1,000 years ago, but Tibetans were preserving it. So then I became very involved with the Dzogchen Dalai Lama and the Tibetans, and I really appreciate them for being the ones on the planet who have preserved what I call the inner science, or the mind science, or the interior science of Buddhism, spiritual science of Buddhism. Not really Buddhism as a religion. Why do I say not as a religion? Because people think of religions as belief systems, and they think that, you know, you're supposed to believe something and depend on someone, and that will, and then that person will save you. Whereas Buddha said even he couldn't save you, but if you followed a method that he had discovered yourself and developed your own understanding, then you could actually free yourself from suffering with the help of teachers. And ultimately by yourself, you know, but meanwhile on the way, maybe the help of some teachers. And so so that's really a bit thrill. I'm still working on it and I'm still not free of suffering, but I'm a little closer, put it that way. And I'm close enough, I'm enough more close that I am confident that I can get all the way sooner or later, but being lazy, maybe later.
Well, I think
so that's roughly my saga.
Wonderful. I'm speaking with my honored guest, Bob Thurman, Tenzin Bob Thurman, who's a teacher at Columbia University and has really brought the core essence of Tibetan Buddhism to the West, and you know, this dire consequence of what the Chinese have done in Tibet has burdened many of us, and the destruction of monasteries, the killing of both, you know, these monks and lamas and nuns, and it's really just brought anguish to our souls, those of us who are sensitive to this. And after our first intermission, I'd like to ask Bob about his humanitarian work through an organization that he began and where it's headed and what we can do to support what he has done in the West. So this is Heart Center Talk Radio. I'm David Christopher Lewis, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned.
Transformation Talk Radio's amazing hosts span from the Pacific to the Atlantic Coast. With a world full of loyal fans, what's stopping you from joining our clan? Bring your powerful message to listening ears. We've been helping people do this for many years. Want to make a difference? We can help you out. Just give us at Transformation Talk Radio a shout. It's easy to get started with an email so small to host@transformationtalkradio.com, and then we'll give you a call.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio, the best in talk radio.
Tune in to Heart Center Talk Radio with David Christopher Lewis, a gifted clairaudient, Aquarian spiritual author, and talented musical composer on TransformationTalkRadio.com every Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 p.m. Eastern Time, with delivering more than 4,000 messages from angels, masters, and divine beings. David will share the ascended master's teachings, insights, and surprising revelations to light bearers. Meet transformative guests who embody change and inspire hope, and get a refreshing and deeply meaningful perspective on life.
So we're back now with Bob Thurman, my honored guest on Heart Center Talk Radio. As many of you may have known, Bob is considered the leading American expert on Tibetan Buddhism. And as he's explained, Buddhism is, in his perspective, is not just a religion. It's a way of life. It's a way of being. And I have really focused in my life since 1994 on the inner core of the Buddhist teaching, which I believe is a non-dual teaching. And Bob really is an exponent of this. And by God's grace, you know, he gave us permission to publish this beautiful little booklet called The Jewel Tree of Tibet, which is a ritual that isn't part of a larger book that he translated from the Tibetan Buddhism. And it's the mentor devotion, which is just amazing in the imagery that you partake of when you really get to the core of the true High Lama's meditation practice. So, Bob, tell us about your path of Buddhism, where your journey led you, and now to the founding of this wonderful organization, Tibet House US, and its purpose and what you do today to promote both the Dalai Lama and Buddhism in the West.
Yes, well, thank you, David. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the Jewel Tree, which was actually an oral recording initially with Sounds True people, and then it was made into a book by Macmillan Free Press very kindly. And people have had a good experience with that. And what that is called, that's a version of what is called the Lam Rim in Tibetan, Stages of the Path to Enlightenment, which has three main divisions, one which makes you methods of becoming less attached to ordinary lifestyle, you know, getting and spending and fighting off the enemies and whatever, you know, preserving your egocentric way of being and realizing that it's not leading you in a good direction, that you will die and so forth, and that your human life is much more valuable than to waste it just getting and spending and staying the same, evolutionarily speaking, as you were when you were born. And so that's the first section of it. And the second is then once you go through that and get more detached and more transcendent in your outlook, you feel much better, actually, yourself. And you take a break, give yourself a break about not having to be a billionaire and not having to be famous and not having to be president of the U.S. or whatever ambition we are foisted upon us. And we get more happy, actually, just by being more transcendent. And then once we feel more happy that way, we can cultivate compassion for others, because we notice that those who are running around in the rat race, in the treadmill, with full commitment to whatever their mundane or material goal is, the ego goal, you could say, they are actually going nowhere, and they're making themselves tense and miserable. And you can see, when you feel better, you sort of see it in there. So then you're able to cultivate compassion very strongly. That's the second main division. And then when you sort of have a balance of transcendence and compassion, so that you are determined to really find the solution, and you also want to do it for others at the same time as yourself, then you come to the third main one, which is the most important one, and where the Buddhist science comes in, which is where I find what I most value in Buddhism, and the Buddhist education in that science. And that's where you look into what is called emptiness or selflessness, which really means relativity. I would say, as a scientist, as a physicist, the Buddha anticipated Einstein and the quantum people by 2,500 years, discovering, really, no joke, I gave a talk at a conference there, and a couple of quantum, non-quantum people, physicists, you know, sort of more working physicists, just ran away. But the quantum people totally agreed that the discovery of the fact that there is no non-relative essence or component in any relative thing, and that no non-relative thing can relate to a relative thing, actually, so they're as good as disregardable. The absolute is therefore emptiness, meaning that the absolute simply is kind of the framework of a complete relativity. It doesn't mean that the absolute is nothingness. There is no such thing as nothingness. Nothingness is also empty, and things are empty. Things and nothings both are. Some things and nothings are both empty, meaning all things are totally interrelated. Absolute relativity, you could even say, which is a kind of contradictory way of speaking, but absolute there means total, you know?
Very Zen. Very Zen.
Very Zen. Well, that's the main Buddha's main insight.
Yeah.
And the key about it is, which is so surprising to us, is that it's surprising because we don't really normally realize that we carry around with us a slightly psychotic attitude and wiring where we think what we really are is something that we have no contact with. But you'll not get through delusions just by not thinking. You have to think it through. So the inferential understanding or rational understanding is very important, but then you have to meditate on that understanding and deepen it, and it becomes visceral. And when you viscerally really know that you are nothing but a complete interrelatedness with everyone else and everything else, apparently, and as I say, I don't claim the full experience at all. I'm struggling still, but I've had few tastes that I'm confident about. You feel blissful. Uh-huh. You feel such a relief because you're all there. You know, you're fully present. You're not anymore holding yourself in reserve like, well, maybe I want to run away to my separated self if this gets too much for me.
You've kind of inferred that Buddha was really a great psychologist, and I've believed this for years because I meditated upon what he was actually doing under the Bo tree, and I think it was a dramatic form of self-reflection and inner introspection where he discovered the keys to existence by going deep within and finding that diamond crystal energy field of beingness that's some people call presence, some people call the I am, some people simply call it, you know, mindfulness or heart-centeredness. And I believe that he was the greatest psychologist the world has known. And you've said, you know, Jesus was hip and Buddha was a psychologist more than a prophet. And so I honor this concept because I think we've made them idols, people idolize them, and we have the same cosmic starry stuff within us that they had, and they taught that we did. They, you know, they saw that we each could fulfill this. We have the Buddha nature within us that we are in the process of allowing to be unfolded and manifest. Absolutely. So, and I honor you for your humility, realizing that, you know, we're all in this process of becoming or accepting what already exists as our Buddha nature. And So what other keys do you have that you've perceived through your translation of Tibetan Buddhism into English that are great for us in the West to kind of understand and accept for our daily journey, meeting where the rubber meets the road in our daily lives, where we're not just off meditating all the time, we're dealing with the issues of life today?
Right, right. Well, you know, there is this famous practice called mindfulness, which my friend Sharon Salzberg and others are great teachers of. And mindfulness is like the doorway into the wisdom that we need to really be free. I think mindfulness by itself will not lead to that freedom completely, but it opens the door to it. Because what mindfulness really is a way of remembering that you're there now. In a way, what it is, it's a taking of the memory away from ruminating about what happened in the past, or what is related to memory, having fantasies about what might happen in the future, and coming to remember that you are in the present, and bringing all of your attention to what's going on outside and inside your mind. And when you do that, you begin to realize that your mind is not a unitary thing. You begin to see through the feeling of that unchanging identity, that self that you sort of have been carrying around. And you realize that there are different channels. It's like a radio that becomes self-aware, that it has different channels in it. There are certain intense stages of mindfulness where it's breaking through into wisdom, where you become a bit self-conscious, and maybe you shouldn't do that while you're driving on a crowded highway. You know, you should just be alert to what's outside. Although, if you have a strong habit of mindfulness, if you have, like, when you feel road rage when someone cuts you off or something, you'll be enable yourself to change channels and not go with the rage. You know, instead notice that the other person was confused, or they were in a hurry, or whatever it is, and you're not going to help them or yourself by getting all overheated. So you get much more freedom inside your own mind about your reactions and things when you notice that you have the option to choose different reactions, and you don't have to just completely follow whatever impulse is in there. And that mindfulness really strongly helps you to do that. And so that's one of the very important tools that we teach in Love Your Enemies, which is how to shift your mind internally from one track to another, so that you do not have to just react and let someone press your button and then go berserk and then cause more harm than you already had started with. So that's the beginning. But then one does have to go finally to a different level, a more intense level, and which one will naturally do if one cultivates mindfulness, where you sort of see through the mind, you drill deeper into the mind, and you pull off different masks of the self, you could say, and finally you realize that behind all the masks there is no fixed entity. There's just a loving heart that is a life pulse and energy and really love. And this is a wonderful thing that Buddha discovered. You know, there is a concept in Buddhism, Buddha nature. Sometimes it can be called Buddha nature, sometimes it's called clear light of the void. And the clear light of the void is something that the modern quantum people have kind of discovered, although they don't call it that, where they get down to where the absolute vacuum, according to their mathematics, startles them in a sense that it possesses absolute energy, infinite energy. And the reason that it seems to be a vacuum is that infinite energy doesn't do anything, because it doesn't need to, because everything is already done. But yet it's infinite. It's like a pool, a reservoir of infinite grace, you could say, which the loving mind of the relative person can draw on to benefit others. And it's very, very, it's where Buddhism connects to the theistic mystical traditions, where they say, you know, God is love. You know, God goes beyond being a particularly culturally bound person who only speaks in certain languages and only appeals to certain types of believers, et cetera, the exclusive type anthropomorphic God. And it goes to the idea of God as pure love, that is pure bliss producing energy. Because of course, when you love, you want your beloved to feel bliss, to be happy, to be fulfilled. And so love an infinite love, therefore, it must have infinite energy to accomplish the fulfillment of the beloved beings. And so if God is love, then emptiness is indivisible from the clear light of love and bliss. And so it's very cool. There's a meeting there. And Buddhism doesn't mind religions. In fact, it loves them. And it wants them to deliver their message. But it worries about the tendency in some religious institutions in some eras to become projection screens for egotistical, you know, nationalism, chauvinism, fanaticism, various kinds of what we call in Buddhist psychology absolutisms.
Right.
That is, making myself an absolute, making my belief an absolute, making my idea of what the ultimate might be, my God, an absolute, and then being destructive on the basis of feeling empowered by that absolute, being destructive of poor, sensitive, relative beings, seemingly empowered by that absolute. And, you know, suicide bombing is like that, and killing others and so forth for religious reasons is very, very terrible. So Buddhism worries about that, and sometimes Buddhists themselves get into that. But luckily, there's kind of an awareness in Buddhism that Buddha's deepest insight is selflessness and emptiness. So when your Buddhist crusader gets on their elephant or white horse or whatever it is and says, charge death to the unbelievers, or charge in the name of Buddha, then Buddha might remind them that he's empty himself, and there he can't be found, you know. There is no Buddha, you know. Kill me first, says Buddha, you know. And don't kill other people, you know. And I don't mind if they blow up my statue or do whatever it is, because I'm not my statue. You know, I am your wisdom, actually, which means your freedom and your love for other beings and your nonviolence, therefore, toward them. So it a little bit, it never led, Buddhism had its bad periods and bad actors, but it never led to major crusades, sort of like we've seen in the West, which happens with theistic religion, and in India too, which happens in theistic, you know, where people get into projecting their parental absolutism on their idea of God.
This is Heart Center Talk Radio. I'm David Christopher Lewis, and my guest today is Tenzin Bob Thurman, and we'll talk more about Buddhist thought, maybe the Dalai Lama, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you for listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Please stay tuned at the top of the hour.
Holistic Medical Center is where you find it all. A healthy space with doctors who care, see, and listen to the whole you. Hi, this is Dr. Darvish. If you have not found an answer to your chronic symptoms, you will find answers here at Holistic Medical Center. Our doctors find the root cause of your symptoms and guide your body towards healing naturally. We transform lives from within. Visit drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Tune in to Heart Center Talk Radio with David Christopher Lewis, a gifted clairaudient, Aquarian spiritual author, and talented musical composer on TransformationTalkRadio.com every Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 p.m. Eastern Time, with delivering more than 4,000 messages from angels, masters, and divine beings. David will share the Ascended Master's teachings, insights, and surprising revelations to light bearers. Meet transformative guests who embody change and inspire hope, and get a refreshing and deeply meaningful perspective on life.
Tune in to Angels and Answers with Artie Hoffman, the hottest psychic with the warmest heart, every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time and 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio. With passion and a sense of humor, he delivers spiritual and motivational messages for both individuals and groups of people, and is internationally known for his amazing psychic abilities. Don't forget to call in at 800-930-2819 for live on-air readings, and visit Artie at artiehoffman.com.
So we're back now with Bob Thurman, my honored guest on Heart Center Talk Radio. As many of you may have known, Bob is considered the leading American expert on Tibetan Buddhism. And as he's explained, Buddhism is, in his perspective, is not just a religion. It's a way of life. It's a way of being. And I have really focused in my life since 1994 on the inner core of the Buddhist teaching, which I believe is a non-dual teaching. And Bob really is an exponent of this. And by God's grace, you know, he gave us permission to publish this beautiful little booklet called The Jewel Tree of Tibet, which is a ritual that isn't part of a larger book that he translated from the Tibetan Buddhism. And it's the Mentor Devotion, which is just amazing in the imagery that you partake of when you really get to the core of the true High Lama's meditation practice. So, Bob, tell us about your path of Buddhism, where your journey led you, and now to the founding of this wonderful organization, Tibet House US, and its purpose and what you do today to promote both the Dalai Lama and Buddhism in the West.
Yes, well, thank you, David. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed The Jewel Tree, which was actually an oral recording initially with Sounds True people, and then it was made into a book by Macmillan Free Press very kindly. And people have had a good experience with that. And what that is called, that's a version of what is called the Lam Rim in Tibetan, Stages of the Path to Enlightenment, which has three main divisions, one which makes you methods of becoming less attached to ordinary lifestyle, you know, getting and spending and fighting off the enemies and whatever, you know, preserving your egocentric way of being, and realizing that it's not leading you in a good direction, that you will die and so forth, and that your human life is much more valuable than to waste it just getting and spending and staying the same, evolutionarily speaking, as you were when you were born. And so that's the first section of it. And the second is, then once you go through that and get more detached and more transcendent in your outlook, you feel much better, actually, yourself. And you take a break, give yourself a break about not having to be a billionaire and not having to be famous and not having to be president of the U.S. or whatever ambition we are foisted upon us. And we get more happy, actually, just by being more transcendent. And then once we feel more happy that way, we can cultivate compassion for others, because we notice that those who are running around in the rat race, in the treadmill, with full commitment to whatever their mundane or material goal is, the ego goal, you could say, they are actually going nowhere, and they're making themselves tense and miserable. And you can see, when you feel better, you sort of see it in there. So then you're able to cultivate compassion very strongly. That's the second main division. And then when you sort of have a balance of transcendence and compassion, so that you are determined to really find the solution and you also want to do it for others at the same time as yourself, then you come to the third main one, which is the most important one, and where the Buddhist science comes in, which is where I find what I most value in Buddhism, and the Buddhist education in that science. And that's where you look into what is called emptiness or selflessness, which really means relativity. I would say, as a scientist, as a physicist, the Buddha anticipated Einstein and the quantum people by 2,500 years, discovering, really, that no joke, I gave a talk at a conference there, and a couple of quantum, non-quantum people, physicists, you know, sort of more working physicists, just ran away. But the quantum people totally agreed that the discovery of the fact that there is no non-relative essence or component in any relative thing, and that no non-relative thing can relate to a relative thing, actually, so they're as good as disregardable, The absolute is therefore emptiness, meaning that the absolute simply is kind of the framework of a complete relativity. It doesn't mean that the absolute is nothingness. There is no such thing as nothingness. Nothingness is also empty, and things are empty. Things and nothings both are. Some things and nothings are both empty, meaning all things are totally interrelated. Absolute relativity, you could even say, which is a kind of contradictory way of speaking, but absolute there means total, you know?
Very Zen. Very Zen.
Very Zen. Well, that's the main Buddha's main insight.
Yeah.
And the key about it is, which is so surprising to us, is that it's surprising because we don't really normally realize that we carry around with us a slightly psychotic attitude and wiring where we think what we really are is something that we have no contact with. But you'll not get through delusions just by not thinking. You have to think it through. So the inferential understanding or rational understanding is very important. But then you have to meditate on that understanding and deepen it, and it becomes visceral. And when you viscerally really know that you are nothing but a complete interrelatedness with everyone else and everything else, apparently, and as I say, I don't claim the full experience at all. I'm struggling still, but I've had few tastes that I'm confident about. You feel blissful.
Uh-huh.
You feel such a relief because you're all there. You know, you're fully present. You're not anymore holding yourself in reserve like, well, maybe I want to run away to my separated self if this gets too much for me.
You've kind of inferred that Buddha was really a great psychologist, and I've believed this for years because I meditated upon what he was actually doing under the Bo tree, and I think it was a dramatic form of self-reflection and inner introspection where he discovered the keys to existence by going deep within and finding that diamond crystal energy field of beingness that's some people call presence, some people call the I am, some people simply call it, you know, mindfulness or heart-centeredness. And I believe that he was the greatest psychologist the world has known. And you've said, you know, Jesus was hip and Buddha was a psychologist more than a prophet. And so I honor this concept because I think we made them idols, people idolize them, and we have the same cosmic starry stuff within us that they had, and they taught that we did. They saw that we each could fulfill this. We have the Buddha nature within us that we are in the process of allowing to be unfolded and manifest.
Absolutely.
So, and I honor you for your humility, realizing that, you know, we're all in this process of becoming or accepting what already exists as our Buddha nature. And
Right. So
what other keys do you have that you've perceived through your translation of Tibetan Buddhism into English that are great for us in the West to kind of understand and accept for our daily journey, meeting where the rubber meets the road in our daily lives, where we're not just off meditating all the time, we're dealing with the issues of life today.
Right, right. Well, you know, there is this famous practice called mindfulness, which my friend Sharon Salzberg and others are great teachers of. And mindfulness is like the doorway into the wisdom that we need to really be free. I think mindfulness by itself will not lead to that freedom completely, but it opens the door to it. Because what mindfulness really is a way of remembering that you're there now. In a way, what it is, it's a taking of the memory away from ruminating about what happened in the past, or what is related to memory, having fantasies about what might happen in the future, and coming to remember that you are in the present, and bringing all of your attention to what's going on outside and inside your mind. And when you do that, you begin to realize that your mind is not a unitary thing. You begin to see through the feeling of that unchanging identity, that self that you sort of have been carrying around. And you realize that there are different channels. It's like a radio that becomes self-aware, that it has different channels in it. There are certain intense stages of mindfulness where it's breaking through into wisdom. where you become a bit self-conscious and maybe you shouldn't do that while you're driving on a crowded highway. You know, you should just be alert to what's outside. Although if you have a strong habit of mindfulness, if you have, like when you feel road rage, when someone cuts you off or something, you'll be enable yourself to change channels and not go with the rage, you know, instead notice that the other person was confused or they were in a hurry or whatever it is, and you're not going to help them or yourself by getting all overheated. So you get much more freedom inside your own mind about your reactions and things when you notice that you have the option to choose different reactions and you don't have to just completely follow whatever impulse is in there. And that mindfulness really strongly helps you to do that. And so that's one of the very important tools that we teach in Love Your Enemies, which is how to shift your mind internally from one track to another so that you do not have to just react and let someone press your button and then go berserk and then cause more harm than you already had started with. So that's the beginning. But then one does have to go finally to a different level, more intense level, and which one will naturally do if one cultivates mindfulness, where you sort of see through the mind, you drill deeper into the mind, and you pull off different masks of the self, you could say, and finally you realize that behind all the masks there is no fixed entity, there's just a loving heart that is a life pulse and energy and really love. And this is a wonderful thing that Buddha discovered. You know, there is a concept in Buddhism, Buddha nature, sometimes it can be called Buddha nature. Sometimes it's called clear light of the void. And the clear light of the void is something that the modern quantum people have kind of discovered, although they don't call it that, where they get down to where the absolute vacuum, according to their mathematics, startles them in a sense that it possesses absolute energy, infinite energy. And the reason that it seems to be a vacuum is that infinite energy doesn't do anything because it doesn't need to because everything is already done. But yet it's infinite. It's like a pool, a reservoir of infinite grace, you could say, which the loving mind of the relative person can draw on to benefit others. And it's very, very... it's where Buddhism connects to the theistic mystical traditions, where they say, you know, God is love. You know, God goes beyond being a particularly culturally bound person who only speaks in certain languages and only appeals to certain types of believers, et cetera, the exclusive type anthropomorphic God. And it goes to the idea of God as pure love, that is pure bliss-producing energy. Because, of course, when you love, you want your beloved to feel bliss, to be happy, to be fulfilled. And so love, an infinite love, therefore, it must have infinite energy to accomplish the fulfillment of the beloved beings. And so if God is love, then emptiness is indivisible from the clear light of love and bliss. And so it's very cool. There's a meeting there. And Buddhism doesn't mind religions. In fact, it loves them, and it wants them to deliver their message. But it worries about the tendency in some religious institutions in some eras to become projection screens for egotistical, you know, nationalism, chauvinism, fanaticism, various kinds of what we call in Buddhist psychology absolutisms.
Right.
That is making myself an absolute, making my belief an absolute, making my minor idea of what the ultimate might be, my God, an absolute, and then being destructive on the basis of feeling empowered by that absolute, being destructive of poor, sensitive, relative beings, seemingly empowered by that absolute. And, you know, suicide bombing is like that, and killing others and so forth for religious reasons is very, very terrible. Buddhism worries about that, and sometimes Buddhists themselves get into that. But luckily, there's kind of an awareness in Buddhism that Buddha's deepest insight is selflessness and emptiness. So when your Buddhist crusader gets on their elephant or white horse or whatever it is and says, charge death to the unbelievers, or charge in the name of Buddha, then Buddha might remind them that he's empty himself. And there he can't be found, you know. there is no Buddha, you know. Kill me first, says Buddha, you know. And don't kill other people, you know. And I don't mind if they blow up my statue or do whatever it is, because I'm not my statue. You know, I am your wisdom, actually, which means your freedom and your love for other beings and your nonviolence, therefore, toward them. So it never led. Buddhism had its bad periods and bad actors, but it never led to major crusades, sort of like we've seen in the West, which happens with theistic religion, and in India too, which happens in theistic, you know, where people get into projecting their parental absolutism on their idea of God.
This is Heart Center Talk Radio. I'm David Christopher Lewis, and my guest today is Tenzin Bob Thurman, and we'll talk more about Buddhist thought, maybe the Dalai Lama, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Tune in each week to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher on TransformationTalkRadio.com, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Tune in and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information.
Galios miso dressings are delicious and made with only the finest, freshest, and all-natural ingredients. Galios miso dressings are low in fat, sugar, salt, and carbohydrates. They do not contain any artificial ingredients or any wheat, eggs, vegetable gums, or MSG. What they do contain is astonishing flavor and silky texture that can only come from using premium quality ingredients. Order online with free shipping at www.galeoscafe.com. That's GALEOS cafe.com.
Tune in each Tuesday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected with Dr. Julie Kroll, featuring weekly segments with David Eisen and the Chakra Sound System. Each week, you will journey through infinite possibilities, expand into social potential, and find beautiful beginnings where endings leave off. Changemakers from around the world will explore what's emergent about the environment, relationships, health, and the evolution of consciousness. Visit thedrjulieshow.com.
Tune in to Sheer Alchemy with Leslie Fontaine on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get ready to stir up your passions, identify your blocks, and shift into an entirely new existence. Leslie Fontaine is a transformation catalyst and clairvoyant who uses her intuitive and energetic gifts to catapult listeners into living the life they were born to live. Whether it's shifting from scarcity to abundance, from emotional pain into joy, or from illness into health, Leslie will help you step into the true essence and power of all that you are with the help of the Ascended Masters and Archangels. You will not be the same. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for show dates and times, and LeslieFontaine.com to say yes to explosive abundance.
So we're back with Bob Thurman, and we're talking in the intermission about, you know, my wife and my path a little bit. And it was interesting because in 1994, I remember deciding that in this life, my goal would be to be a Buddha. And, you know, maybe that's kind of outlandish in terms of what most people would desire. However, I discovered once I made that commitment that there were all kinds of wonderful teachers, books, and Dharma centers that I could kind of get involved in or read or commune with that facilitated this new state of awareness that I was kind of blending into and becoming that really helped me on my spiritual journey. Because, you know, growing up Catholic and moving through Christianity and then kind of more of a New Age tact, I got to a certain point, and yet I felt that there was more and there was something deeper. And I really have found in the teachings of Buddhism, as Bob has really elucidated it in a number of his books, and a very deep methodology, as he shared, that the Buddha presented that leads us internally to the source of pure beingness, the source of nonviolence, the source of compassion and all of the virtues and qualities that the Buddha, as well as Jesus and other great saints of East and West, have modeled. So Bob, tell us, if you were to wrap up just briefly, what's in this new book on, you know, forgiveness and loving your enemies, as well as what you've really discovered and what you teach at Columbia, kind of the core essence of what you found in your life to be the highest and the best of the Buddhist teaching.
Okay, great. Well, the highest and best, as I said earlier, is the realization of selflessness as a cognitive and psychological understanding, which leads actually to compassion and selflessness, where we have like Mother Teresa, Florence Nightingale, sort of selflessness. Because when you realize your relativity, then you become naturally and more compassionate and loving to others. And because you realize that you are them in some way, and they are you, like a mother loves her child, identifying with it, expanding her sense of identification. And Buddhahood is defined as a Buddha is a being who has not only awakened, but also has blossomed into feeling, identifying with all life, and feeling that the all life is her life or his life, and that he must nurture and share all life. And the little small bit that he started with, where he was confined to being inside one particular piece of skin, can be given even easily for the benefit of the rest of that great life. And it's such an extreme, fantastic, evolutionary, transcendent attainment Buddhahood is, really. It's not just a new idea in one's mind, but the new idea and the resolve to develop a new being in one's mind is really good. So anyway, I love that. I love that we humans have that possibility. And, you know, when you mentioned that you loved what Buddha did under the tree, and we must never forget that one thing that Buddha did under the tree was he remembered his infinite previous lives, and then he remembered everybody else's infinite previous lives. And usually they don't mention that, but if you had infinite previous lives and everybody else had previous lives, then we've all been everything to each other infinite times. So without mentioning compassion prominently in the most simple versions of the Buddha's enlightenment, they are explaining how not only does he attain nirvana or freedom from suffering, but he attains an insight of his complete entanglement and intertwinement with every other being. For always has been and always will be, and therefore it should be. If we feel viscerally that we are completely intertwined with everybody else and their fate is our fate, there's no option but to be completely loving, because we want to love all of them because they are us, and we also hope they will love us, but we don't care because we're just going to love them anyway. And of course, if they're really happy, they will love us. Because anybody who's really happy loves everybody who comes within their range, let's say. Because happiness naturally overflows like that. So, you know, they even know that in commercials. You have commercial on TV for mood-altering drugs, like Zoloft and things, about somebody takes that pill, and then they look out the window and see flowers, and they love their kid and their dog and everybody. You know, there's commercials like that. So anyway, the thing is that in the Love Your Enemy, Sharon and I discern four different kinds of enemies. And we call it the outer enemy, which is the one normally people think of. Then there is an inner enemy, which is our inner anger and sort of sense of out of control emotion, where our ego, by posing as an absolute within us, seems to dominate our normal relative mind and body. It makes us do things on the basis of over exaggerated emotions, passionate emotions, that are often destructive and to ourselves and others. And that's the inner enemy. And that's a worse enemy than the outer enemy in the Buddhist insight, because the outer enemy can only destroy you. At worst, they can do is kill you or torture you. The inner enemy can make you go into negative life forms for an infinite future. It can send you down to hell. It can send you to animal life forms. You know, the Buddhist evolutionary theory is, biological theory, is that we continue to be involved in life. And we could go down the scale of evolution as well as up the scale, where we have arrived very high on the scale as a human now by dint of great intelligence and great compassion and love. But we could go bad if we turn into a hate monger and a killer and a murderer and an evil person. So everyone has the capability of doing
so
that.
So Hitler could have come back as a cockroach.
That's right. Yes. Well, worse than that. Worse than a cockroach for a while. And then Hitler will come back as a Buddha, actually.
Yeah.
According to, because the time is infinite, And right. sooner or later, he'll get sick of harming others and being harmed himself. Sooner or later.
Well,
and luckily, there are so many compassionate, totally compassionate Buddhas and Jesuses and Muhammads and Krishnas and what have gods and humans. Buddhists do not disbelieve in the existence of gods. They just don't think there's one big boss god who controls everybody, that they don't believe that, because they don't want to blame the whole thing on any one being. I think that's a mistake. We're all in it together, kind of. And anyway, that's so then the inner enemy, and then there's something called the secret enemy, which is the psychological structure of the absolutized self, which is very deep and in secret because we don't quite realize that we have such a structure, and that really we're some kind of we have a certain psychotic element in our normal minds where we think we're something that we're not. And that's very deep, that one, and really involves wisdom and intelligence to understand the secret enemy. And then we have what we call the super secret enemy, which is very strange because of that inner psychosis, this, and because of having sometimes unconsciously a fantasy that there's a perfect entity that's the perfect us in there. We kind of despise our imperfect us, which is our relational mind and body and speech and relations and status and everything. And we have a sense of self-loathing that we hide from ourselves under a veneer of arrogance and narcissism and all kinds of seemingly self-confident things. But underneath there is a deep insecurity that we think we just don't deserve anything and we shouldn't be happy and there's something wrong with us. And making us kind of masochistic in a subtle way. And that's what we call the super secret enemy. And so we give methods of how to deal with each of these in order. And I must say, we don't focus as much as we would have liked on the outer enemy, where to really show that Jesus and Buddha and every one of the great teachers of humanity, whether they call themselves religious or scientific or whatever they were, by telling humanity that you should love your enemy and you should be nonviolent in situations of violence, they are actually being practical. They are not being unrealistic or idealistic, because if you're violent, it rebounds on you definitely.
Yes.
And it does not really solve the problem. It seems to solve it. You blow somebody away, but you know their relatives come back at you. They come back at you in a future life. And they're reborn maybe as your kid who hates you.
It's enlightened. It's enlightened self-interest to be compassionate and loving.
An enlightened self-interest in love. You know,
yes.
That's right. And actually, you can't really love another until you learn to really love yourself and want your really truly overcome your self-loathing and your inner masochism and love yourself and say, why should I worry that I'm not president of the United States or I'm not rich and billionaire or famous or whatever? Why should I worry? I should be happy with what's here and take quality time with my loved one here or whatever, you know. That's what we give, is the methodologies in those books. We give tastes of that, and we hope people have told us they're finding them useful, and we'll continue to work and elaborate that, and there are a lot of other works and other people give good teachings about it.
Wonderful. And just to sum up, Bob says in his introduction to this wonderful book, Love Your Enemies, let's get one thing straight. Ultimately, we have no enemies. So thanks so much. This is Heart Center Talk Radio. David Christopher Lewis signing off with Bob Thurman. Stay heart-centered and mindful and live in the light. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Heart Center Talk Radio with David Christopher Lewis. Tune into this hit show every Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 p.m. Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com as David shares received messages from the angels, masters, and divine beings and touches on progressive revelations for today on diverse topics including divine science, advanced alchemy, cosmic solar awareness, the new blue wave, abundance and healing. Get a refreshing perspective on life and meet some of the beautiful people who embody change and inspire hope. For more information and to contact David, visit HeartCenterTalkRadio.org or call 360-894-4410. See you next week.
Transformation Talk Radio's amazing hosts span from the Pacific to the Atlantic Coast. With a world full of loyal fans, what's stopping you from joining our clan? Bring your powerful message to listening ears. We've been helping people do this for many years. Want to make a difference? We can help you out. Just give us at Transformation Talk Radio a shout. It's easy to get started with an email so small to host at transformationtalkradio.com, and then we'll give you a call.